They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax. Joining us today, we have Tom DeWeese, and Tom's been in a giggly mood, so I'm really excited because that means that we're going to have an incredibly fun show today. Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Sue. Glad to be with you again.
Well, Tom, you've been upsetting some people. I mean, you laugh with me, and we have a lot of fun when we talk, but not everybody's thrilled to hear from you, are they?
No, they're not.
What have you been up to?
We have been...
Go on, I'm sorry.
You ready?
Yeah, go for it.
We have been fighting across the country, helping grassroots activists learn new tactics, getting new tools to them and so forth to fight the forces in local, county, and even some state governments against the policies of sustainable development that are depriving people of their private property rights, that are changing our communities, that are changing our system of government. And we've been having some victories. And they're baby steps, no question about that. We're just getting started. But that has got the powers that be a little nervous. And so we're the attacks against us have stepped up, and that's okay. That means that we're getting under their skin, and what I'm trying to do is step up what we're doing so that those they get a little more nervous. See if we can keep them that way.
So why are they nervous? What have you been doing to make them so nervous?
Well, one of the things we've done, people understand who ICLEI is, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. This is an organization, it's a UN NGO organization. They helped write Agenda 21 back in 1992 and introduced it at the Earth Summit, and they made it their mission to implement this policy in every city in the world. And they had gotten over 600 American cities to start paying them dues so that they bring in all these programs, they bring in computer programs, they bring in training sessions, documents, whole plans, and they bring it right into the community, and the county commissioners or city councilmen don't have to do anything but sign on to it. And they were on their way to 1,000 American cities when we began to target them a few years back. And in the last, since 2011, we have managed to get more than 150 American cities out of ICLEI to stop paying them dues, to end their membership there, and we're continuing. I can't keep up with it, really. I get reports all the time that more cities have begun to rescind that, and a good close associate of mine who deals with these people, they don't know who he is or what he's doing sometimes, but they'll talk to him. And the head of ICLEI USA told him that they are terrified of what we're doing, and they can't get more American cities to join them because we've made them political poison. And that's what's got them nervous. That's one of the things. So.
And you should wear that as a badge of honor. that you manage.
Believe me, I do.
Yeah, that's something great. You talked about, you mentioned Agenda 21. I'm not sure that everybody understands what that is. Do you want to explain that to us?
Yeah, Agenda 21 is a document that came out of the Earth Summit in 1992, and it was the culmination of work that was done over several years. The UN sponsored a whole bunch of international meetings. They had a couple of meetings they called Habitat meetings, and these were meetings where they began to lay down the groundwork for a plan to change how we live, change our communities, change the way we use energy, change the way we develop, change how we use water, and all the things we need for society. And they had Habitat 1, they had Habitat 2, they had several other meetings, and they also had there was a committee on global governance, and they came out with their own documents and so forth, talking about private property and how private property couldn't be dealt with as an individual situation. In other words, they were against private property. And what they're talking about is putting together a plan for global governance. Well, all that came together in 1992 at the Earth Summit under a document called Agenda 21. At the time it was introduced, it was called a comprehensive blueprint for changing our society. Al Gore said that we had to go through a wrenching transformation to cleanse us of the horrors of the 20th century industrial revolution. That, of course, meant the revolution that brought indoor plumbing, indoor heating, you know, all the things that made life worth living. That was the horror that we needed to do away with.
Longevity, and, right?
Exactly, yeah. So this document came out in 92. When they talk about it being about a conservation plan and a way to just do sensible development, that's all it's about, just how we develop our cities. But it's got whole chapters in there about empowering women, labor unions, in school children, all this kind of stuff. You start looking at that and say, what's that got to do with conservation? It has to do with behavior modification and changing our attitudes, values, and beliefs, changing the way we live, all based on the excuse of protecting the environment. And when these very same ideas were introduced to the world under an economist named Karl Marx, we rejected that. But you put the environment, attach that to it, wrap it up in a little green blanket, and all of a sudden American eyes start to glaze over and we go, oh, okay, we got to do that. Well, it's the same garbage, but that's what Agenda 21 is. And what happened was after the Earth Summit, George H.W. Bush at the Earth Summit signed it. 50,000 delegates were there, and 179 heads of state were there, including George H.W. Bush, signed it. It is not a treaty. It is what's called a soft law policy. It's a suggestion. It's a comprehensive blueprint, in their words. And once that was done, the same NGOs, the non-governmental organizations, the Nature Conservancy, the Sierra Club, the Audubon Society, ICLEI, other organizations came into our federal government, and they began to work with the federal government to write grant programs through the EPA, through HUD, through other agencies of the government. These grants had, if you took the money, they had very specific strings attached, very specific regulations on water use, on materials you could use for building materials, on plumbing controls, on how your streets would operate, all that. And then as they got that done, and Bill Clinton put together through executive order the President's Council on Sustainable Development, which his purpose was to bring this soft law policy, this idea, this comprehensive plan into American law, and then the same NGOs went into the state governments, got the state governments to pass regulations that said every community in the state had to do a comprehensive development plan. And what happened then? As your county commissioners are standing there saying, what the heck is a comprehensive development plan? The same NGOs arrive, and they said, don't worry about a thing. We've got everything right here in a box for you. We've got the money for you. We got everything. And step by step, that's how these policies have been implemented in almost every single community in the United States today.
So when I look around Fairfax County and I see the changes that are taking place and the way the area looks, I mean, before we went on the air, we were talking, and you said you'd been to the studio before. I don't know when you were here, but I bet you if it was more than 2 years ago, you would not recognize this place now.
I actually ended up going to a movie this winter out that way. I used to go in Merrifield a lot in that area, and I was astounded by the change that's taken place, that whole little development that's built up there. And, that is part of what we're talking about here, the idea of creating communities where people live there, where they have walkable communities, they call it, where you walk to the store, you walk to your job, you walk to the post office, you live in your apartment there, and that's our future. That's a sustainable community. And what it means is, you probably have no place to park your car. They do have parking lots there, I know, but in a lot of places around the country, they're building apartment buildings now where there are no parking lots. They are doing things where you have to share the street with bicycles, where they put or with pedestrians, where you they put these huge mounds in the middle of the street, asphalt mounds that you have to climb up one side and down the other. Makes it very difficult for you to drive down the street. That's called traffic calming.
Yeah.
What it means is we're going to make it really difficult for you to drive, and you're going to be sitting there at home saying, oh, I need to go to the grocery, but I don't want to get in the car and drive there. So what's a hassle getting down there? And so you don't. And that's what it's designed to do. So they're working on controlling energy, working on controlling water use, as I said, all these kind of things.
The Washington Post did an article on this show when I first started back in 2001, and they called this area CD industrial area because all you had was just industrial development. There was nothing here, and now it's the Mosaic District with garages. You park in a garage. You don't, parallel parking in the street, narrow streets, and it's just development, and people are built, living one on top of the other. And not far away at the Dunloring Metro Station, they've taken the parking lot that was used for commuters, and you'd be amazed. They've got these huge apartment complexes in there. They've got shops. They've got parking garages. They've got all kinds of things, and you just walk across the street and get on the metro and go.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that when you were here or not.
I didn't see everything because it was at night, and I just went to a movie when I was there. But I did, walk around a little bit, but I didn't see all of it.
Yeah.
But I see it around the country, and this is what organizations like the American Planning Association will call a livable community, a walkable community. Isn't this wonderful? It's healthy community that we're all right here together. We can all join hands. We can sing Goombaya. We can have just a wonderful time. As we all step on top of each other, and what they really hate is what they call urban sprawl, evil urban sprawl.
Yeah.
And what urban sprawl is people who are escaping these massive cities, trying to get to a place where their child has a yard to play in, where they can breathe, where they're not being stepped on by everybody, where what do cities have? Cities have crime, they have drugs, they have gangs, they have inefficient governments, they got high taxes, and crowded streets and everything else, and people want to get away from that. And so they say, I'm going to move out to a development out somewhere, and we're going to live there. These guys say that's evil, can't have that. Tell you what, Shu, if they could have a video camera on the doorway as a new family has just bought their new home in one of those horrible urban sprawl developments and show their faces, what they would see are smiles on their faces. This is ours. Here's a place for the kids. And then the other evil that they talk about are, as those developments grow up out there, then we get strip malls, these horrible places that do what? Oh, yeah, supply goods and services to the people who live there and supply jobs. And what do all those homes and what do all those businesses do? They supply tax dollars to the government. That's how communities, that's how a society grows. But what they want to do is herd everybody into these pack-and-stack cities where you're living in these high-rises, and they're telling you how wonderful it is, and you're living on top of each other, and they can now control your thermostat, they can now control your energy use, they can now control your ability to travel here or there. And here's another thing that's happened. When they put this together, let's take a community, we'll take Portland, Oregon, which was the poster child for this, what's called smart growth.
Yeah.
They put a line around Portland, Oregon, and said no more growth is going to take place outside of this line. Well, if you could take an airplane over Portland, Oregon, you can see that's exactly what's happened. Everything outside the city, there's nothing, and inside the city, there are these massive high-rises, and it looks like a mini New York City. So they put that line around the city, and they say no more development. Now, what happens inside that city, those lines? Populations start to grow. Now they have to up the density numbers. The density becomes a major issue when it comes to smart growth. And as a population grows, they have to change the very nature of the community. You can't have a suburban house with a yard. It takes up too much space. We need that space. There are situations in Portland. There was one particular case where a guy's house burned down. He was not allowed to rebuild his house because of the density numbers. He had to build an apartment building. And then the density numbers kept going up to where now we can't have just a duplex or a four-apartment building or something like that. We've got to have a high-rise, step by step by step. That's how they herd you into the stack and pack. And those density numbers are key. When you put a line around something and say nothing is allowed outside of this, you've created a problem. And if you start to read the words of the people who are behind all this, you will find lots and lots of quotes talking about the need to lower population. Why? Because in their stack and pack smart growth communities, the density numbers keep going up. And so they're desperate to get rid of it. And how do you lower the population? Do you start banning people from having more than one child? Do you start forced abortions? You start following the brilliance of China and how to do that? This is what we're faced with when you start a policy like this that maybe sounds just so wonderful. Oh, yes, we're all going to live here together, walkable community. There are consequences to their actions, and that's what the consequences are.
What's terrifying is if you look at some of these buildings that they're building, it's all plastic, cardboard. Everything is just disposable, Tom. That's the silver lining. It's not going to be around for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's all going to collapse. I mean, the problems with badly built housing and water intrusion and mold is just growing exponentially across the country because we've got all this garbage that's being built. But the thing is, the counties, the municipalities want this because instead of having one house on a chunk of land, now you've got 20 condominiums or 100 condominiums or whatever it is that they've built on this one chunk of land, and just think of the tax revenue from that.
This goes directly back to 2005, the Kelo decision in the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Where they made the most unprecedented decision in that court ever in the history of the United States. There is not a single precedent. There is not a single statement by a founder. There is not a single decision made by previous courts that would ever uphold or agree with what the Kelo decision was. They made the decision that we don't have private property in this country anymore. If the community decides that it's better for the community that they take a certain swath of land and use it in another way where it raises more tax revenues, that's for the common good, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing happen now is, back in after World War II particularly, there were a lot of developments, a lot of communities that were built where people had a little ranch house, and they maybe had maybe as much as a quarter of an acre of land on it, had a backyard, had a front yard, had a driveway, and you get 100 or so of these houses in one of those communities. And then now today, they're looking at that and they're saying, we can tear all those houses down and we can build a high-rise, stack and pack, and we can get much more tax revenue, we can stack more people there, and that's wasted land. Let's take that. And they now have, with the Kelo decision of the Supreme Court, they've got the power to do it. And that is, they had, people said, how could the Supreme Court come up with this? Why would they do that? Take a look at the precedents we've heard. Stephen Breyer, others of the members of the court, made many, many comments about how we now have to look at international law as a background for or a basis for American law. Really? You know, the Supreme Court has the easiest job in the world. They're on there for life. They don't have to worry about job security, and all they have to do is look at the Constitution of the United States and look at what laws government passes and say that works or it doesn't. That's all they have to do. That's how hard their job is. And instead, they make it harder by saying, well, we need to look at international law. Well, sustainable development coming out across the world was a major piece of this, and that's what they did. They had to make that decision in order to impose sustainable development, Agenda 21 policy, because the fact of the matter is you cannot impose sustainable development unless you are damaging private property and private property rights. And that, and so they had to make that decision. There is no private property.
Well, they've been taking away, chipping away at private property rights for a long time with all these covenants and HOAs and the power to fine and foreclose, to collect that fine if you don't please the powers that be. And you're not king of your own castle anymore.
No, this is one of the things that I am, what I'm trying to do with state legislatures, as there are some state legislatures attempting to pass some effective language in legislation about this and to try to stop some of this. And one of the things that I started to tell them is that you've got to change the attitude here. We have got to start treating the property owner as the owner of his land, not some guy who's a pawn in the game. He's not chattel of the government. He's not a child. He's the owner of the land. But what these regulations are doing is that they're treating owners like children. This one-size-fits-all, we've got to have all these regulations because maybe a property owner next door will move in and put a pig farm there and it'll smell up the neighborhood. Maybe a bad owner will come in and put a bright light that shines in your eyes. Maybe a owner will come in, a new owner, and they'll have a lot of noise going on, all that. And so we've got to have rules and regulations that treat all the property owners like children, that they might possibly do something bad. And that is the way we're using these excuses to put all of this in. It is completely changing our way of life and our system of government in this country under the auspices of sustainable development and smart growth.
Some years ago, I went to the CAI Law Seminar, and one of the presentations that I attended was a couple of attorneys telling everyone there. Now, mind you, the CAI attorneys were there and they were getting continuing learning education, CLEs, credits, for attending these sessions. This particular session was training the attorneys to treat the board members as the parents, ignore the homeowners because they were children.
There you go.
They are children. They don't know what's good for them. These were the exact words. They don't know what's good for them. So you work with the board member. Then they get the board members in there, and they get people who are easily manipulated or tyrants. And, you know, they'll just keep feeding the tyrants, and the tyrants go nuts, and you end up with all of these legal issues and legal problems, which generates income for these blood-sucking attorneys. And then you manipulate them and tell them what they're going to do, but you ignore the homeowners. They don't know what's good for them. And I think that thinking has sort of gone up to legislators because they keep coming up with idiotic laws all the time. And they pass it.
Yeah. Well, this is what happens. When I talk about a transformation, what Al Gore called a wrenching transformation, and I'm saying that smart growth and sustainable development, the Agenda 21 policies, are changing our nation and changing our system of government. What I mean by that is that we are seeing, with these grant programs, with all this money that's put in there, and you see these non-governmental organizations. This is a key to this. If you could see put your county commissioners out front and say, okay, this is your government, but no, it's not. Because standing behind them are all these non-governmental organizations, private organizations. They're 501c3 organizations.
Right.
And they would have absolutely no influence or power in your community except that those elected officials give it to them.
Right.
And they're standing there behind them every single day. They bring in sample legislation. As I said, they bring in money. They bring in the whole plan. They've got international plans for plumbing, for electricity, for all kinds of, you know, for what kinds of materials you can use to build with, as you were mentioning earlier. They have all this right there, and they're whispering in their ear constantly. Here's the latest we have. They give them sample legislation. When your elected officials are elected, the first thing we do is send them off to some national organization. There's a National Governors Association. There's a National Conference of Mayors. There's a National Organization for City Councilmen, for County Commissioners. And they go there, and they're with their fellow people in their same office from around the country. And what are they hearing at that meeting? Those same NGOs are standing there at the podium with sample legislation. Here's the latest that we've come up with. And they come home armed with this, and the same NGOs greet them when they get home and say, ah, here, we're here to help you put all this together. Eventually, your elected officials begin to think that this is the proper role of government. And you let somebody like me come in there and start to tell them otherwise, and they've never heard that before. And these NGOs are standing behind them, and they're saying, oh, don't pay attention to him. The guy's nuts.
Okay. Yeah.
just a freak of nature. You know, don't pay attention to him. And so what they begin to establish are non-elected boards, councils, and regional governments. And this is now transforming your government into a whole new system of a little Soviet that is, unresponsive to you. And that is what I mean by they're changing our system of government, and that eventually changes our way of life.
But what they do is they brainwash the citizens, because they'll bring them in, and they'll bring these NGOs in who come in with these pretty pictures, and they'll show you photos of Paris and London and, you know, Rome, and they'll say, look at what we've got here. Look at all this open space and the waste and stupid growth and all of that, and look at Paris. Yeah, Paris took centuries to evolve. Those buildings that they're showing you did not get thrown together overnight. Those buildings have been there for centuries. And the community developed. You cannot manufacture that. But what they're doing here is not working, Tom. It's not working because they've developed some of these little walkable communities, and they send people out in them, and they say, all right, move in there. But the stores are not, there's not enough income for the stores to sustain themselves. There's not enough money coming in. So you look at someplace like Celebration Florida, which is one of the poster children of these nonsense ideas. Nine times out of ten, they don't have a grocery store there because the people who walk to the grocery store are not going to keep it in business. There's not enough business there. And you don't, and everything's much more expensive because there's no competition. You can't, you know, somebody's going to compete. You've got, people are going to get in the car and go from one grocery store to the other or one furniture store to the other, whatever it is they want. There's competition. There's a healthy competition there. In these things, there isn't. So everything sort of collapses eventually.
Well, you know, interesting you mentioned that because the American Planning Association did a report on smart growth. It's called Growing Cities Sustainably. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of this report was to determine if the if their plans worked. Guess what? The report actually says it doesn't work. They use the excuse, of course, that we're trying to cut back our carbon footprint and protect the environment. And the last paragraph of the report literally says it has absolutely no effect on that. You know,
yeah.
Just is bogus, completely bogus. But did the American Planning Association finally wake up and say,
no?
No. Why? Because they're fed by the grant money, and this is where they get their power. And the other tragedy that is taking place is that the National Association of Realtors has picked up on this now. Here is an organization that is based on the idea that you buy private property, you buy a home to build wealth. This is how America became the most wealthy nation on earth, was that we had private property. We built a strong middle class that way. 60% of all the homes, of all the businesses in this country were started by people in the middle class using the equity in their home to fund it, to get it started. 60% of the people who work in this country work for those kinds of companies. At least that's the way it was. But now, with what's happening is we're finding less and less and less private property in the country. So there's less to sell, there's less to buy, there's less to build a wealth from. We are seeing the middle class being destroyed. We are seeing our economy being destroyed. And along comes the National Association of Realtors that are promoting smart growth. They've even got their own grant programs and to help move on with it and everything, promoting these walkable communities and all this. And what you were saying earlier about treating us like children and the these meetings and holding up the pictures, talk about juvenile. They try, the American Planning Association tries to get people to accept planning, especially after we started to attack it and get people to question it. They stand up there and they, as you said, they hold up a picture of a pretty community, mm-hmm. and they say, here's this, or they hold up some horrible rundown ghetto somewhere, and they'll say, which one would you like? And people say, oh, I'd like the pretty one, please. And they say, oh, you're for planning. This is how they start off these.
Yeah.
These facilitated meetings.
Yes.
A facilitator is a guy trained in psychology, and he has a predetermined outcome. And if he does his job really well, he guides everybody in that audience to the decision that everything that comes out of it, it was their decision that they made it up. And what I start doing to demonstrate how stupid and juvenile this is I'll hold up a picture of Marilyn Monroe and a picture of Rosie O'Donnell, and I'll say, which one do you want? You know?
Oh, that's funny. I've actually attended one of those facilitated meetings. I attended. And the funny thing is we were broken up. We were fed all this nonsense for two or three days, and then we were broken up into groups and sent in with these facilitators who were supposed to get feedback from us as to what we wanted. So we sat in a circle, and he was at a whiteboard, and he's writing, going down, what do you want? And so all of the buzzwords that we heard were coming back. I want to be able to walk to the library. I want to be able to buy my groceries. I mean, think about it, lady. You're not going to go and buy a week's worth of groceries and carry it home. I mean, there's no common sense in all of this.
Yeah, right.
You know, think about it. Go buy a new bed, a mattress. What are you going to do? Throw the mattress on your back and walk home? Stupid woman.
That's what they do in Chinese agrarian villages.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's plenty of space there.
Yeah.
So anyway, he gets around and he gets to me and he says, and how would you like to live? And I said, with dignity. You should have seen his face. He turned around automatically and he stopped. He turns back to me and he says, dignity? I said, uh-huh. So he turns back to the whiteboard. He's thinking about this. Now, do I remember dignity in there? I don't remember dignity. How'd you spell that? So we went through this, and I'm sitting there. I'm just kidding myself on the inside, and I'm just keeping a deadpan face on the outside. I'm going, uh-huh, dignity? He writes half of it, D-I-G, dignity? Yes. And so when he gives his report back, all along with all the other facilitators, he said, and somebody said they wanted dignity. I have no idea what they mean.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
When he says, how do you spell that, you say F-R-E-E-D-O-M.
But it's all the stuff that they were told that keeps coming back to them. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah. As I mentioned, we've started to push back. And as we began to score some victories around the country, get people to listen, people to come into meetings and start to ask questions, to start to really bust up those facilitated meetings exactly as you're doing, you did in that, they began to panic. And one of the things that happened, the American Planning Association, which is one of the worst in the country in putting all this together, first of all, they put a place on their website called Myths and Facts about and it said flat out in there that Agenda 21 was nothing, and that they had anything they were doing was absolutely nothing connected to Agenda 21. Everything they were doing was completely local. And then they put together a boot camp for all of their planners to teach them how to deal with us, what to do about this. One of the things they put together was called a glossary for the public. This is the opening line. I have it in my hand. It's the opening line of the APA's glossary for the public, written for planners. It says, given the heightened scrutiny of planners by some members of the public, what is said or not said is especially important in building support for planning. That's the opening. And then it goes on. Now, when I give my speeches, I have about 35 words I use. If you hear these words, then you know this is what they're talking about. And it's like they took my speech and they said, the subtitle is Critics See Red. The following are examples of words and phrases that have become highly politicized and generate suspicion among citizens. And it's saying, don't use these words anymore. Affordable, Agenda 21, Delphi technique, collaboration and consensus, density, livable, localizing, localized planning, long-term, region-wide planning. They even go into far public visioning, public-private partnerships, smart growth, stakeholders, sustainability, walkable. Don't use any of those words anymore, because we started telling people this is what it meant. And the incredible thing in this is, I'm trying to find the line where, it says, avoid talking about or linking plans and planning with regulatory matters. Let me say that again. Avoid talking about or linking plans and planning with regulatory matters. Shu.
How do you do that?
This is nothing but regulatory matters, planning.
These people are nuts. The sad part is that so many people actually sit there and nod and go, uh-huh, and they regurgitate the same nonsense.
Yeah. The minute that you start to answer those questions, the minute you sit in your little drum circle, the minute that you start throwing out words that you can write on the blackboard that you can talk about or the board, you have joined the process. You're in it. You are being facilitated. Psychology is being used on you the minute you do that. My favorite story of what happened in one of these meetings happened in Greenville, South Carolina, where, again, some before unheard of NGO group pops up somewhere, and they've got yet another plan to lock away thousands of more acres in the community. And they're having their prerequisite public meeting, which is going to be facilitated. And they'll say, oh, yeah, the community helped put this together. 100 property owners who knew the game showed up. And they, before they could get anything started, they started shouting out, who are you people? Who funds you? Where'd you come from? You know, this kind of. Well, about half an hour into it, they adjourned the meeting. And so about two or three weeks later, they tried to do it again. The same 100 property owners showed up with the same thing going on. In 10 minutes, the head of the organization walks up to the podium and says, this meeting has reached the wrong consensus.
But I thought they weren't supposed to use that word.
Well, this was before that was done. This was before that.
This is before they banned that, huh?
Yeah. Before but there you go.
Before that word became politically incorrect.
Exactly. But there you go. You know, this is what we're dealing with. This is a mentality we're dealing with. It is all done with smoke and mirrors. It is all done through a house of cards, a house of lies, and they have built this on that. But the reason they're so scared of us, the reason that they respond so violently to us when we stand up is because they know that. And they know that if we are successful in getting people to hear us and understand what they're up to, it'll all come crashing down. And what I say to audiences all the time, stop looking down in defeat. Stop thinking that this can't be stopped. I know it seems massive. When you, if you just get into it today and you look at how far they've come and what, all the things that are there, you think, this can't be stopped. That ain't true. And we are. That's why they're so scared of us, because they know that if we begin to get to enough people and get enough people to understand it, it'll all come crashing down on their heads.
I think, Tom, there's so many little bits and pieces. I'm so thrilled that you're doing the big picture and you're doing Agenda 21 and all of these NGOs and all of these government agencies and all of that, because those are part and parcel of a big picture. But there's so many other little bits that will come in. They're directly related to what's going on. They're part of it. They're facilitating what's going on. And Wayne Hyatt, and I'm going to tell you this because I thought about it when we were talking a little bit earlier, something you said. Wayne Hyatt is a past president of CAA. He's an attorney who writes a lot of the covenants and the governing documents for a lot of the associations. He wrote a law review article called Evolution and Reinvention, or Reinvention and Evolution, I don't remember which it was. But he said, and a lot of what he came up with on how to make sure that associations work and survive comes from what you have been talking about with the walkable communities and the sustainability and all of that. I mean, they were redesigning neighborhoods. They had kitchens put in front porches, mailboxes, collective mailboxes, so that people would have to walk past their neighbors. And since they're sitting in front, they would say hello. The whole thing was social engineering to such a degree that it was unbelievable. Make all these happy people. But one of the things he said was that when you buy into a controlled community, both of those spelled with a K, that you owe the association. I mean, you're going to be paying them all along. But when you sell that, any profit that's made. So let's say you buy a house for $100,000, and then property values go up around the world, because it tends to work that way. But let's say you sold it for $150,000 two, three, 4 years later. You are supposed to share that $50,000 increase with the association, because if it wasn't for the association, you would not have had that increase. Can you believe that nonsense?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things I like to point out to people, because sustainable development has been sold to the American public as a means of smart conservation, just protecting the planet. It's all about protecting the planet. And as I pointed out earlier, the Agenda 21 actually has things in there about labor unions and empowering women and the whole thing. Well, the logo that they use a lot are three connecting circles, and each circle is labeled. And one is economic prosperity. One is social equity. And of course, one's ecological integrity. That's the excuse for the whole thing. The economic prosperity are public-private partnerships, which is right out of Mussolini's fascist playbook of contract between, or connection between, private businesses and government. That is the worst possible scenario you can think of for business, because you end up with government-sanctioned monopolies running everything. But social equity, the plank of social equity, is the key. If you don't understand social equity, you won't understand what's happening to you with sustainable development. And what you just described is social equity. Social equity is redistribution of wealth. That's what it is, worldwide. Every bit of this transformation that they are moving on us is redistribution of wealth. Your wealth. What are you witnessing here? We're trying to explain to people that sustainable development, Agenda 21, the reason we're so opposed to this, every single issue, literally, that we are facing today is connected to this. Does it make sense to you about what's happening with immigration at the moment? Doesn't make sense to you about the idiotic ideas that we're implementing on our economy and so forth, Obamacare, all of that. All of that makes sense when you understand the social equity plank of Agenda 21. That is what you're fighting, and that is what is destroying American society.
So that's what this is all about.
That's the whole source of it.
When you just peel all the layers back, that's what you get down to.
It's what you get down to, that global governance, one power at the top deciding all this. I actually had, a few years ago, I got an email on a quiet Sunday afternoon from a guy attacking one of my articles I'd written on the fallacy of man-made global warming. And I, like an idiot, I responded to him, and of course I got another one back, I started to look into who this guy was. He was the head of something called the Eden Foundation, and I looked it up. The Eden Foundation is an NGO through the United Nations, and what their claim to fame is that they advocate globally acceptable truth. And their website was filled with letters from world leaders, from business leaders all around, saying, what a fantastic idea. This is great. Here's the basis for this: globally acceptable truth. What? And by the way, that is the root of our public education system. Here's what you're allowed to believe, and nothing else is acceptable. And what they're trying to do, if you look back in history, world history was pretty much the same for most of man's existence. We had candlelight for light, and we had horses for transportation. And all of a sudden, along comes Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, and the Wright brothers, and they screwed everything up of a well-ordered society. They don't ever want to see that happen again in the ordered society they're trying to put together. And so globally acceptable truth. this is all you're allowed to believe. And now you watch as they attack, like barbarians, attack science, attack facts, attack all the things that we hold dear and the ideals of freedom, that people have the right to make their own decision. That has to stop. And that is the basis of the education system. That is the basis of government, globally acceptable truth.
You know what really scares me, Tom, is the fact that so many people believe all of this nonsense just because they read it somewhere, just because they heard it. You know, so much of it doesn't make sense if you think about it. For instance, you've got this little grocery store and you're going to walk to it. Ladies, think about carting a week's worth of groceries home because you're not allowed to drive. You know, is that really what you want? Is that really what you want?
And there's another piece that goes with that about what they're selling in that grocery. Because if in a true smart growth society where all the cities are really very feudal, everything that you produce, everything you live on in that community, you produce. And if you look, they've got very sophisticated maps that show the stack and pack, but right on the outside of that, they have where the farmland is, all got controlled by the government. I have a document I'm not supposed to have that was a draft document written by the federal agency HUD, Housing and Urban Development, as a draft report for Habitat 2 that was done back in the 80s or so, 70s, 80s. And it really explains this, that a community lives off of what it grows. And even talked about tool libraries. You couldn't have tools. We had to get it from the government to go out and work these farms. Well, one way I present this to people is, do you like bananas? Kiss them goodbye. Because if you don't have the atmosphere to grow in your community to grow bananas, then you won't have any. Nothing's going to be trucked. Nothing's going to be shipped because that hurts the environment. And so, you know, look, think what that does to the economy. One of the things that they were advocating in 2012, they had Rio Plus 20. This was 20 years after the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro in 92, celebrating basically what they've accomplished since then and what they needed to do to move forward. Several people there advocating an economy meaning zero economic growth. Right back to the Wright brothers and Henry Ford and Thomas Edison. Zero economic growth is their plan.
That makes no sense. I don't know why they're doing it, unless it's easier to control people when they're dumb.
Bingo.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it. People are easier to control because they don't have access to the internet that Al Gore invented, right?
Yeah.
They don't have access to information, and they're just going to be kept in the dark, basically, literally kept in the dark. No lights, no nothing.
Yeah. And that's if you're all in the stack and pack communities and your travel is restricted, only public transportation to get around, and so you stay right there. You never leave the neighbor. You never leave the building. You know, this is a controlled economy, and zero economic growth. Well, Barack Obama's done a heck of a job implementing that, hasn't he? That's about what we've had.
Yeah. Tom, I always love having you on because I always learn so much from you, and you manage to connect the dots and just bring the big picture into focus. But unfortunately, we are out of time. But before we go, I would like you very much to give us very quickly your website so that people can check it out. And if you have in 1 minute, tell us how we can fight this.
Yeah. The website is AmericanPolicy.org, AmericanPolicy.org. We're the American Policy Center. And on our website, we've got lots and lots of tools that we've created. I've got an archive of articles that I've written over the years. I have my newsletter, The Deweese Report. And we started back in June doing webinars, free webinars on how to stop Agenda 21. And we've done one every month. We're going to do another one this coming Sunday. You can get on those for free. On the website, it says there's an archives for the webinars. You just click on that, and you can go right in. You can see all the ones we've had up till now, and then you can be prepared to see the one we're going to do this coming weekend.
Sounds great. Thank you so much. I hope you'll be back really soon.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.